They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. I can't think of anything self-deprecating to say about us, so I'll just say that I'm your co-host, Elliot Mogulyines. I'm joined, as always, by my hanger-on, Nathan Mogulyines. I let him hang around and do the show, and he's fine. He does a good job.
Only fun when you let me talk.
See, there you go. You're welcome. That was actually really smart, because it made me seem like a complete jerk playing along.
Yeah.
So Nathan's out maneuvered me. Nathan, Superman, it is out right now. If you wanted to, you could close out of this podcast, throw your device out the window, get yourself to your nearest theater and watch it. I was actually looking at showtimes earlier, and it's playing at the theater that I go to. It's an AMC theater. It is playing 21 times a day.
Holy over cow. The week.
So yeah, you are not wanting for options. Results very positive so far.
Yeah.
Strong reviews from critics and even stronger response from audiences. In fact, let me get the latest facts and figures here. Okay, never mind. I was going to look at Rotten Tomatoes, but I have to turn off my ad blocker for that, and I'm not going to do that. So from what I remember from these old facts and figures is that a lot of like 8 out of 10, 4 out of 5, yeah. A- type things from the critics, audiences were even higher than that. So, yeah, it seems like all eyes are on the box office now. Can they translate this into the kind of long-tail theatrical run that they need, or that they would certainly like? That's a question for another day. I'm excited. I'm planning on seeing it once it's kind of died down, because I don't like watching movies with big crowds. So yeah, I mean, whatever we think of it, whatever happens next, I hope that the team is proud of themselves. James Gunn, I was a doubter, but look, you've proved me wrong. I'm happy to admit it. So, or at least you've proven that people like it. I hold and reserve my own opinions. But Nathan, what have you been seeing? What have you been feeling? What have you been thinking? Give us the whole package, like your whole emotional process.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of the same stuff. A lot of positive reviews for this one. A lot of really positive responses from audiences. A lot of the stuff that I think we all kind of expected to see in terms of James Gunn from the get-go. Sounding like he was trying to go for a more hopeful Superman, a more uplifting, optimistic Superman compared to the Zack Snyder Man of Steel movie. And it seems like audiences are responding very positively to this. I've said this year a couple times. I went to Thunderbolts with my wife, fiance at the time, I think. I can't remember. Been married so long, it's, you know, everything's blurring together. But I said about that movie, which was also very positively reviewed, that we need to make superhero movies corny again. We need to have the heroes win because they use the power of friendship to overpower the villain. We need to have people in stupid-looking costumes flying around making lame jokes. No cool quips that are really ironic and, oh, I don't really care. Make lame jokes again. Make Superman lame again. And I think James Gunn did that. I'm also very excited to see this movie. I might end up seeing it this weekend. I don't mind watching it with a crowd of people who are gonna clap when Superman says, I believe in truth, justice, in the American way, or something ridiculous like that. So, yeah, I'm very optimistic for it. I guess I would say that the last two movies that James Gunn made were also very critically acclaimed, and then I went to them and was less than impressed with both of them. So the odds of me going to this one and also saying, yeah, it's not that great, decent odds, I would say, but I'm ready to go in with an open mind. I think the trailers have all looked pretty good. And yeah, it's all in the box office now. I mean, Warner Brothers needs this DC universe to do something, man. They haven't gotten anything going for years. Except for, well, Batman. Every time they make a Batman movie, it does gangbusters.
That's true. And I love Batman. And I think that Batman should stay where he is. I don't need Batman to be winning through the power of friendship.
Yeah, I mean, Batman's one of those, I don't mean that for Batman, but like Spider-Man, he should win with the power of friendship.
I mean, he kind of did.
He did.
The trilogy.
Yeah.
The Marvel trilogy. Yeah, what was I going to say?
Who knows?
Oh, yeah. I don't love clapping. I'm more worried about people talking in like a speaking voice and being on their phones. Because when I went to see 28 Years Later, it was a disgrace, man. It was an outrage. But maybe that's just Kansas City. I don't know.
It hasn't happened here in Ames. It's because you're in the big city.
I know. Small town living. Get me back.
It's a country song, I think.
Is it?
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, it does sound like one. Anyway, now I've forgotten what I was going to say next. Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, on the topic of the DC Universe, I think that Superman succeeding is hardly what I would call a guarantee of Clayface succeeding.
Yeah, I do. If they're trying to get their universe off the ground, I don't think they're really going about it in the best way possible. Because, yeah, the movies they've got lined up is Clayface, Sergeant Rock, and Supergirl. That's a terrible line. I mean, not to be a hater, I think Clayface is like a cool villain. I would love for him to show up in a Batman movie. Why does he get a movie? I don't understand the logic. Sergeant Rock, I've never even heard of Sergeant Rock. I don't know what on earth. For a while, allegedly, Luca, I'm not even going to attempt his last name, the director of Call Me By Your Name was attached to Sergeant Rock. So,
wow.
Yeah, I don't, they're, this might be a let them cook moment, but from my seat outside the kitchen, it looks like they're cooking with a lot of garbage.
I mean, I agree. I don't think this is not how I would capitalize on a lot of goodwill. Even though I said I used Clayface as my example, mostly because I didn't even know that Sergeant Rock was happening.
Oh.
Or Supergirl.
Yeah, Supergirl's like in the can. Like it's finished.
Wow. Well, that doesn't mean it's getting released.
It's so true.
Remember Batgirl?
Yeah, good grief.
Clayface is honestly of those three, the one that I think has the most potential. Although even then you're gonna have to maneuver around the Batman in the room. Unless they choose that movie as the movie in which to debut the DC Universe is Batman, which would be insane.
I mean, it would be one way to get butts in seats, I suppose.
That is true. Would I go to see that just to see the new Batman? Oh, no. I do really like Batman. I don't know.
Anyway.
That's a question we'll have to answer another time. In terms of other stuff, I said I had bits and bobs beforehand, but it's really just one thing. That A24 is making a movie out of The Backrooms. Are you familiar with this property, Nathan?
Vaguely. I think I've seen people talk about it. I don't know if I've ever... I've probably seen gameplay of it. But, like, I wouldn't... Oh, it's not a game?
Well, there are video games, but it's not a video game originally.
Oh, it's like a concept?
Kind of. This is so strange that I'm explaining, like, an internet phenomenon to Nathan.
It is,
I think it was, like, a creepypasta at first.
Oh.
And then what really kind of pushed it out into the world was a web series made by a YouTuber named Kane something, Kane Parsons or something like that. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because they're making a movie, and Kane, the man himself, the man who started this all, is the one directing it, and he's like 23 years old.
Sick.
But I have actually seen some of the web series, and basically what it is people lost in this ostensibly endless labyrinth of empty spaces, of these like weird looking wallpapered rooms with bizarre layouts. And it's the kind of like, it's kind of like the new weird. Do you know about this movement?
Good grief, Elliot. No.
Control. Control is the new weird.
Yes.
That's the aesthetic. That you should be like thinking of in terms of just like weird stuff happening. And honestly, I'm gonna be honest, kind of here for it.
Wow.
Okay. This is the kind of like creepy, unsettling horror that I'm coming to really appreciate. Right? Mm. Like, I don't need the gore. I don't need to feel dirty after a horror movie. But just the like the creeping, just the unease that that the web series really has, that the whole concept really has. I'm terrified of being lost as a child. I had so many nightmares about being lost in places. I think it could really be something. That's the only reason. I just wanted to bring that up and to see if you knew anything.
Not really. I do, not to be an A24 stan or anything here. I do think it's kind of neat how A24 is finding non-traditional sort of places for the directors of their movies, because this isn't the first time that they've partnered with YouTube people to direct feature films, because Talk to Her and, well, Talk to, is it Talk to Her?
Talk to Me?
Talk to Me and Bring Her Back are both by a duo originally from YouTube, and they were both very successful. I see a lot of people who really, really like those. So, for all of the ridiculous, stupid things that A24 does, like making an Elden Ring movie with Ben Whishaw in the lead, allegedly.
Really? I haven't heard that.
I just saw it today that he was cast in the movie. I don't know who on earth he's playing, but anyway. Yeah, they do make some interesting choices that then leads to interesting movies. But anyway, Elliot, we've talked enough about...
Wait, hold on a second.
What?
Hold on a second. Okay, first of all, Nathan, these are all rumors.
Yeah, I love rumors. Anyway, that's enough talking about all of this other stuff. We're here to talk about the movie that we're talking about today, Elliot. And...
Yeah, this is your fault, by the way. The listener to know, when I said that I had no plans of seeing this movie last week, and I blamed Nathan for being part of the problem, I did not realize this was his plan.
This was my plan. I just thought it. We did the last Jurassic World movie. I thought this would be a fun... I feel like this is the first chance we've had to do a sequel or like another movie in a franchise that we've already covered firstly, which I just think is kind of neat. Although it is kind of turning into like the one splash page of Dr. Manhattan on Mars, where it's like it's 2025 and I'm watching a middling Jurassic Park sequel. It's 2022 and I'm watching, you know, this sort of thing. Anyway, we're talking about the new Jurassic World movie. It's in theaters right now. They finally put a gosh dang colon in the title, so already were leaps and bounds above Jurassic World Dominion, which idiotically did not have a colon in the title. The movie's doing gangbusters. It's doing very, very well. I think it's made $150 million worldwide already. Undoubtedly is going to recoup most of its budget. It's probably going to get a sequel, I have to imagine. But Elliot, I mean, do I even need to ask what your initial thoughts on this movie are? Or can I just assume you did not enjoy it?
You can make that assumption. Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I guess here's where I want to start. We don't have to start with initial thoughts because my initial thoughts would be similar to you. It's not great. Okay.
Well, actually, sorry. Oh. Do we want to talk about the Odyssey teaser?
I would love that. I thought it was neat. I thought it looked good. It included a bunch of moments that I was able to point at the screen like Leonardo DiCaprio and be like, bro, I read that book. I know when that is. That's when Odysseus is in the ocean. Not the ocean, in the sea.
Do you think that shot of the cave is them going into Polyphemus's place?
That's what I would assume it was. That, because the other times that he's with his men would be when they're, like, on Circe's island, and there's not a... She doesn't live in a cave. She's in, like, a cottage or something.
Yeah. She's just strutting around being smoking. Smoking hot. Homer would not shut up about it.
Well, he had to explain why the men were so stupid, but I thought it looked good. I'm excited for it. I thought it... Yeah, I don't know. It looked like a Christopher Nolan movie. I'm excited, bro. What can I say? Tom Holland was crying. He had tears in his eyes.
I'll agree, and I want it to be known that there is every chance that my opinion on this trailer teaser is influenced heavily by my affection for Christopher Nolan, but I've said a few times that my skepticism about the casting, I do think this clip kind of moved the needle for me, both for Tom Holland and John Bernthal, who I do think is a great actor, but I was a little, I don't know, I wasn't convinced for him. And I'm guessing what's the name of that king that Telemachus goes and hangs out with?
Is it Agiamon? Agiamonon? Or am I thinking of someone
else? Well, whatever.
I know that who you're talking about.
That king guy,
yeah.
Yes.
It's clearly that guy, yeah, that Telemachus goes to ask about his dad.
Yeah, I thought he sold it. Yeah. I thought it was good, yeah.
Looks good.
It's funny, we are so off track here. I went to see this with the other Magellan sibling, Ryan. Whoa. And we actually got there late in the middle of the trailers. And I really thought that the only good thing about my having come to see this movie had passed me by, but that it ended up, they held it in reserve. Like, they played it after, at Fridley Theater, they do the stupid thing where the guy comes out and tells you about movies that are coming out. And so I thought, oh, that's it then.
Yeah.
But then they played the trailer, and I was like, yes.
No, they did the same thing at the AMC theater, the Cinemark that I go to here in Ames, that they literally did everything, and the two guys who were a couple of seats away from me, I could hear them whispering to each other, and they were like pissed. They were very mad. They were like, did we miss it? What on earth did they do? Isn't there supposed to be this? Betsy, I went with Betsy. She was completely oblivious. She thought it had already happened, and then the trailer started, and she's like, oh, is this that thing that you wanted to see? I'm like, yes, this is the Odyssey. Yeah, they're playing us, bro. They put it after everything, after the stupid Cinemark members commercial.
Yeah, and they play it after Nicole Kidman comes out and talks to us about the magical movies.
Oh, gosh.
Love getting to see that every time.
I'm so glad I don't have to see that. Anyway, let's talk about the movie, Elliot, Jurassic World Reboot.
That's an interesting idea.
I think here's the question I want to start with. Do you think this is a step up from Dominion?
Yes, I do. Okay. I think this is better than Dominion.
Do you think it's better than any other Jurassic World movie? Or any other Jurassic Park movie?
I don't know. It's really bad. I think that it might be in a three-way tie with Fallen Kingdom and Jurassic Park 3 for the second worst in the franchise.
Wow. Yeah, I think I would have to agree with you. I think it is a big step up from Dominion, if only because it's, like, competently made in the sense that it doesn't feel like it's been stitched together from 8 different scripts from 4 different people. It is not a step up in terms of good characters or interesting set pieces to put those characters in.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to know where to begin because there's so much wrong with this movie. Mm. I think that the things that, like, immediately were at the top of mind when I was storming out of the theater were waste of Mahershala Ali.
Yeah.
Way too many characters.
Yeah. Oh my. I think that's not to, I don't want to get you off track. I want you to say
Go ahead, please.
But I do think that was the biggest thing that struck me when they introduced the family. I was like, why on earth are we?
You're not doing what I think you're doing.
I'm like, why are they in this movie? And not to mention, we continue Steven Spielberg going through a divorce, or not a divorce, being a child of divorce, has really ruined these Jurassic Park movies because now every movie feels the need to shove in a child of divorce for no reason. And yeah, the family, why on earth are they in there? I don't understand why you would introduce this many characters if you're only going to kill the most obvious red shirts in the history of cinema and not
so true.
Kill any of the, like, other cast, which isn't a huge deal. Like, the original Jurassic Park doesn't really kill that. I mean, it kills, you know, some people who are, I wouldn't call Muldoon, like, a red shirt, but it kills some people. It doesn't kill a lot of people, but I don't understand why this family is in this movie. There's way too many characters, and it just is so distractingly silly. Okay, continue with your problems.
So yeah, waste of Mahershala Ali, way too many characters, mutant dinosaurs, just stop it. Enough with this. Have we really exhausted the catalog of predatory dinosaurs to the extent that we need to bring in the Rancor for this movie? And I mean, I don't like it on principle, but even the D-Rex wasn't even that cool. It just looked like the Rancor.
And it's barely in the movie, too. It felt like I've read Jurassic Park 2, the Lost World book, and in the book, they introduce...
Yeah.
Like,
are you talking about? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, the, like, invisible dinosaurs or whatever that are just serve no function. I don't even think they kill anyone. It's just at the end of the book, they're like, oh, shoot, there's invisible dinosaurs. Anyway.
No, yeah, you're right. Like, they're set up throughout the whole book where they're like, they've got this presence, and people are even asking, like, what's going on? What's happening? What could it possibly mean? And then they figure out it's camo dinosaurs, and they just don't do anything.
Yeah, it felt the same as that it was like it sets it up at the beginning of the movie as like, oh, this is the big bad, and then it doesn't show up until the end, and like it's just there for the climax. It kind of makes that first opening section feel like deeply unnecessary.
Yeah, so yeah, that's bad. Failure to innovate. Crass product placement.
What are you talking about, Elliot? What product could you possibly be seen placed?
We'll get to that, believe me. Toothless pun set pieces. Just an utter lack of tension. Xavier Full stop.
Which character was Xavier?
The boyfriend.
Oh, yes. Okay, got it. I'm with you.
I mean, at this point, I could get into, like, just a bunch of really small things, but I think those are the big level stuff.
I definitely agree with, I mean, it's a waste of Mahershala Ali. It's a waste of Scarlett Johansson. I feel like the person who did the best in terms of, like, I liked them in the movie and I thought they did a good job was probably Jonathan Bailey. Not because I thought his character was, like, amazing, but just because I thought he was very consistently written, and I thought Jonathan Bailey did a really good job of playing up the kind of, like, barely competent nerd sort of type.
Oh, Dr. Loomis? That was distracting to me.
That was crazy.
Them saying Dr. Loomis.
Yes. Well, and his name was even Henry Loomis, which isn't that the exact same name as the guy from Halloween?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure it's Henry Loomis, but yeah, I thought that was bizarre. I was like, is this a reference that I'm not getting or something? That was very weird. But here's one of the things that I was thinking of in the as the movie was going on, was this quote that I saw once that George Lucas told to Genndy Tartakovsky when Tartakovsky was working with him on the original animated Star Wars The Clone Wars shorts. That George Lucas told him that there's something visceral in people when they see something like a dog in the street. Like a dog, right, in the street and there's cars coming and the dog's trying to get out of the way. Or like think of like a squirrel too, right? There's something inherent in us, in most people, I would say, that we see something like that and we have sympathy for it. We're invested in the story just because the story is inherently easy to invest in. And I was just thinking about this as this movie goes through great pains to go through clunky exposition after clunky exposition as the characters talk about, like, their struggles and the things that they're going through, that I was like, dude, I don't need any of this to care about the characters. All I need is for the characters to be under threat by a dinosaur. I see a character, they're being chased by a raptor, I'm rooting for the character. Like, I'm not going to root for the dinosaur. I'm not going to be like, yeah, dude, kill that stupid guy. I'm going to root for the people. And I don't understand why this movie felt the need to have so much nonsense when, Jurassic Park works because it's just people running away from dinosaurs. Like, that is a concept so simple that children understand it. That's why these movies keep making so much money, is because families go, because kids watch it and they're like, dude, sick, a dinosaur. And then they're like, oh, dude, sick, they're running away from the dinosaur. I love that. And there's just, I don't understand why they feel the need to throw in all of this other nonsense when they don't even do it well.
Yeah, it's very poor. And the scene that I'm sure we're both thinking of, or both imagining, is the scene where, so we should probably say spoilers for this review.
Oh, right? Yeah, I guess we've already mentioned the D-Rex.
You've seen it in the trailers. Basically, our position is don't see this movie, although that's not going to stop anyone.
Yeah.
And you've probably already seen it, because this movie has made a ton of money.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it.
Yeah, it wasn't my idea. So there's this scene where Zora is Scarlett Johansson's character,
yeah,
and Kincaid, that's Mahershala Ali,
yep,
are in the cabin. Yeah, the cabin of this boat, and they're basically telling each other all these tragic things that have happened to them. And it's clunky, but also useless, because am I wrong, or does none of this come up ever again?
Well,
like, Zora has lost her partner. She's like a mercenary, and her partner died or something. And Kincaid, he's divorced, and his son died. And you might be thinking, oh, I guess he's going to be paired up with the kid then, and that'll be his thing. No, you could never be a big-time Hollywood screenwriter with that kind of attitude. It's there to be relevant once in his reaction to the father character, and then never again until he makes this sacrifice that isn't actually a sacrifice.
My favorite.
At the very end of the film.
Jeez. Yeah. It's just very poorly done, and it's even baffling to me. I mean, a lot of the things in this movie aren't, like, bad in the sense that I was, like, frustrated. Well, I guess I was frustrated, but in the sense that I was, like, not enjoying the movie. They're bad in a way that is just baffling to me. Like, I don't under... I think you've said this in a bunch of our reviews, that you refer to these things as, like, unforced errors, which is a bit of a sports metaphor. Really impressive from you.
Isn't that a tennis term?
Yeah, I believe it is a tennis term. It's when you're just hitting into the net like a moron instead of hitting it over the net like you're supposed to. Not like a moron. These are professionals. They do this very well. But I just felt like this movie was full of unforced errors. Just things that had no reason to be done at all. And if they were going to be done, had no reason to be done as poorly as they were. I've seen a lot of people talking about this, how stupid the opening scene, where it kind of shows the D-Rex and how dangerous it is. Why on... Firstly, product placement. I was so hungry for a Snickers bar after the movie. I was like, gosh, I really want a Snickers bar. I don't understand why.
I'm not me when I'm hungry. I need a Snickers bar.
I need a Snickers... Yeah, I'm always making goofs in my top secret laboratory that I work in. I'm not me. It was just ridiculous. I mean, it gets sucked into an air vent and the entire system for the entire base goes down. Who designed this? Daffy Duck? It's ridiculous. I think I genuinely said out loud, like, oh, what on earth? How?
Okay, don't be doing that. Don't be talking during
movies. I said it under my breath. But yeah, it was just... Yeah, it's just really... poorly done in ways that seem so unnecessary.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because this movie is bad, but honestly, I think that the emotional level that I was at for most of the movie was apathy. Mm. Right? I wasn't thinking like, oh man, this is annoying me. I was just like, can we get this over with? Like, I just wanted it to be done so I could go home. So I guess that's a little bit harsher than apathy, but yeah, I don't know, maybe I was just kind of beaten into submission by the Jurassic franchise, where I was thinking, okay, this is just gonna suck, this is just gonna be a colonoscopy, it's gonna be rough, but you gotta get it done and get out of there. But yeah, We're all over the place here because there's so much wrong with this movie. And it's all in the separate components, right? It's not like some movies, what's wrong with different aspects kind of blends together. It's really down to these individual components of, like, the set pieces are just lame because we have all identified the red shirts the moment they're introduced. And so, like, maybe we're thinking, oh, which one of Kincaid's crew members is going to die here? They killed off, there's three red shirts and one antagonist. So we have in total four people who can die, right?
Yeah.
And they kill off half of them in the first, like, action-y moment. Mm-hmm. So then there's one more red shirt and he dies in pretty gruesome way, honestly. Or at least I always... Getting swallowed whole, that's pretty rough.
I mean, I think that's another time-honored Jurassic Park tradition, is people dying in ways where you're like, oof, jeepers. Like, they did not deserve that.
Well, what I'm saying is that we already know who's going to die.
Yeah.
And the movie doesn't have the guts to kill off an actual character. So the set pieces are just boring. Like, there's this bit where they come across a T-Rex. And first of all, I always love hearing the T-Rex roar in the theaters. Got to see Jurassic Park for the 30th anniversary. I got to see it in theaters. Oh, man, when the T-Rex roared. It's one of the greatest sound effects in movie history.
Yeah.
But even my appreciation for the vocalization of the T-Rex was not enough to spare this ridiculous scene where the family gets separated from the mercenaries. And I mean, it just goes to show you how useless either of them. You could choose either of the groups to excise and the movie would not change at all. It would probably improve. But so the family they're on their own, and the older daughter goes over to get a raft out of a little shed, and there's a T-Rex lying there, and so she pulls it out onto the deck, and she inflates it, and the raft obscures the T-Rex from our vision, and then it does that thing, you know, the thing where something obscures the threat from our vision, and then when that thing is gone, when the raft falls over, the T-Rex is gone. What happened there? Did the T-Rex get up and then just, like, creep out of view or do a little flip? And it's stupid because the raft is obscuring our view of the T-Rex. It is not obscuring hers. She's standing to the side. She's looking right at the thing. And the T-Rex, I don't know, army crawls out of the way.
Yeah.
Which I would have really preferred to have seen that. Because that would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then the T-Rex, it goes after them, and there's the best shot in the movie where a girl is underneath a raft and the T-Rex's teeth are like,
ooh, that is such a great I love that shot. That was the only, I was like, oh, that's a sick shot. That's
that
so
was the
fun.
Best part of the movie. That was my so favorite part of the movie.
Same shot.
But yeah. So that's great. That's the only good part of the movie. That's the only part where I was actually enjoying myself. Well, I guess I just like listening to Mahershala Ali's voice, but that doesn't really have much to do with the movie. But anyway, so yeah, they go through the motions, right, of peril and close calls, but it's all meaningless when the movie has already tilted its hand so far, it's laid its cards out on the table already in terms of who's going to die and who's going to survive. So there's just no point in this scene because, like, they try to make you think that the youngest daughter died. And I was like, you don't have the guts, movie. You don't have what it takes to sell that kind of tension because the main characters are just perfectly safe. There's no threat to them. I don't even think they get injured. Like, the guy, Dr. Loomis, falls through the canopy and does the old thing where he gets handed off from trees. Gosh. I thought we had moved past that as a society, by the way.
That really annoyed me. I think that was one of the most egregious main character falls and survives.
Yeah.
Since John Wick's stupid fall at the end of John Wick 3.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty bad. Gosh, I do think Dr. Loomis is worse.
Yeah,
it's just like this movie has nothing to threaten us with, nothing to do with all its, well, I was going to say great special effects, but honestly, not the best special effects I've seen from this franchise.
Oh, really?
You don't think so?
Well, I was going to kind of transfer to some positives, and I was going to say that I thought it did look, I don't know if I would say it's the best special effects. I still think that the T-Rex in the rain is, like, some of the best special effects in movie history. I mean, it just looks incredible. All of the little details of, like, its pupil dilating when they put the flashlight in its eye. Just incredible in terms of making you believe that you're really seeing a T-Rex. I thought this one had pretty good special effects. I thought the T-Rex looked good. I thought all of the stuff in the water looked really good. And I think that's one of the harder things to get to work special effects-wise because, like, the water has to actually move, or at least you have to emulate water moving, which is something that's really difficult to do, programmatically speaking. And, yeah, I thought it all looked very good. Definitely way better than, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania or some, you know, Marvel movie that's just been rushed to into theaters with terrible special effects.
Well, I think you're right. I think the dinosaurs look good, but there's some, I thought, was some pretty not great looking green screen in this movie. Okay, like the, when they're on the cliff and they're looking over it, that was bad.
I mean, it doesn't help that they're looking at something that looks almost like Pandora and looks nothing like any natural forming landmass that you could possibly find anywhere on Earth.
Well, in terms of things that get raised and then go nowhere, we learned that there were people on this island, like some kind of tribe or something. They made stuff.
What?
That is...
Oh,
that,
yes.
The only reason that is in the movie is to give Kincaid and the antagonist, who we haven't even talked about. We don't need to talk about him. There's nothing to him.
He's terrible.
Is to give them a way to get down the cliff.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it's there. I don't like that. I think that's bad.
Yeah. Well, and I do...
Also, sorry.
Yeah, no, continue.
Dominion brought back the practical dinosaurs. Am I mistaken in believing that there is no such move in this movie?
Well, I think some of the things might be practical when Dr. Loomis is with the Titanosaurus or whatever that thing was.
Oh, the legs?
Yeah, I think the legs were practical. There's some moments with Dorothea. What is the name of the little Triceratops?
Dolores.
Thing? Dolores. I think Dolores is practical in a couple of her shots. Otherwise, yeah, there's not a lot of practical effect, which isn't a huge... I don't really care, because I don't think there's a lot of moments.
I care so much.
Okay, great.
I mean, that scene... I always think of the bit during the T-Rex escape in the original when the T-Rex is by Malcolm and Grant's car. And it bumps the car. The practical head bumps the car. And then it notices, right, the flashlight in the other car. So it goes over to it. And that's when it transitions into CGI. And I think there's so much power in showing you, like, for real, that this thing is real. This thing is having a physical impact on the world around it. Because it makes it so much easier to transition into CGI, because you've got that, right, that perception of this thing as being tangible, even when it starts, right, moving around in a way that practical things can't. Or maybe they could, and it would just be extremely expensive. But yeah, I just miss that. I miss that in this movie. And that's like one of the only good things about Dominion is that you've got some practical dinosaurs in there. And practical stuff, it just looks better. Or usually. Sometimes, right. I mean, you can do some crazy stuff. When you don't treat your CGI artists like, right, slaves building the pyramid, you can do some crazy stuff with CGI. But... all else being equal, I think that practical stuff is more likely to look real and just looks cooler, in my opinion. And I like seeing the behind-the-scenes stuff of the giant robots. But that is, right, that's just me being, that's selfish.
Yeah, what an old head. What a boomer take, Elliot.
Sorry. Are you telling me you don't feel the magic of movies when you see the miniatures of Isengard and the behind-the-scenes of Lord of the Rings?
I like miniatures. They're neat. I don't know. I do think there's more... Yeah, there's certainly more whimsy in seeing a behind-the-scenes thing and being like, oh, that was practical. Like, that's sick. That's so neat to learn how to you film that. It's certainly more whimsical than seeing the, like, behind-the-scenes photos of Avengers Endgame and going, oh, none of that was a physical thing. Every single piece of
RDJ wasn't even wearing a costume.
Yeah, seeing a bunch of people in like half costumes and a bunch of tennis balls on poles for things is not, it doesn't inspire much joy of movies. Like, yeah, seeing the giant ring they use for close-ups in the Lord of the Rings. Anyway, we're talking about Jurassic World Rebirth. I wanted to kind of pivot towards positives. I don't really have a ton of positives per se. I just have things the movie did competently in contrast to all of the things that it did sloppily and terribly. I think I agree most of the action set pieces are robbed of tension. For me, they were kind of increased in tension because I was feeling the tension in Betsy's hand, and she's... We watched the original Jurassic Park together, and she said that was probably the floor, or not the floor, the ceiling for how scary a movie could be before she's like, we can't watch this, and I'm, like, gonna go to bed because I'm very, like, it's just too difficult for me, it's too scary. Partially because she had read the book, which I didn't even think about until we were in the theater and the first, like, dino section showed up, and she, like, grabbed my hand and was squeezing the life out of it. And so I had very little tension, but I had a lot of secondary tension from feeling the tension in the person beside me. But I do think these sequences are, I hesitate to say creative, because it's not like they're genius in the way that, like, some of the action set pieces in Pirates of the Caribbean, The Black Pearl, are really great action set pieces. But they're competent, right? The bird on the cliff, that's a decent set piece. The T-Rex in the river, decent. Mosasaurus in the water with the little Spinosaurus things that are helping it, that's pretty good. These are
that's pretty cute.
I mean, these are
all working together.
Yeah, I know. They're like a family. I'm rooting for them. Just kidding. These are all decent things. We get kind of a rehash of both the kitchen scene in with the grossest looking. Gosh, I hated the look of these. The final, like, bird things that are chasing them before the D-Rex shows up.
Mutants. More gosh. Mutants.
Were they mutants? Goodness
yeah.
gracious.
Yeah, they were called, like, I don't know. Terra Raptors. It was like a portmanteau of pterodactyls and velociraptors.
Well, they're ugly. I hated looking at them. They were so awful. And maybe I was supposed to hate them, but I just really disliked the look of them. They looked skeezy. They looked like the drug dealers of the dinosaur world. The kind of dinosaur you'd tell your kids, like, oh, don't look at him. Don't hang around that type of dinosaur.
That's dino bigotry, Nathan.
I know. They're so ugly, they made me dino racist.
Well, I mean, in this case, they are literally freaks of nature.
Yeah.
You have nothing to feel guilty about.
But yeah, this section was kind of the least innovative. And then it's just, let's run away from... It is funny. It does really look like a rancor. Run away from the pseudo-rancor. But I think most of the other sections are decent. The music is Jurassic Park music, so it's pretty decent for the most part. All of the actors, we haven't really talked about them much because they're all doing the most by-the-numbers Jurassic Park things possible. Every scene with the family is derivative of either Grant with the kids or any of the other interactions with kids characters have had throughout the history of this franchise. The stuff between Loomis and Zora, where they're talking about what they should do with the stuff, the MacGuffins that are driving the plot, are pretty tenuous. I don't really feel like there's much conflict here. I feel very similarly to this movie as I do kind of the Super Mario Bros. Movie when we reviewed that my overriding feeling is like, this was the best you could come up with. It's not the best people that we have working on this thing, despite the fact that this movie was marketed as one of the points of excitement was the original screenwriter for the original Jurassic Park returning to write this movie. Yeah, David Koepp. He has not been honing his skills in the interim, I would say.
Well, I think it just goes to show you that movies are a collaborative effort. And the idea that you can bring this one guy from the original back and somehow resurrect the series, give it a rebirth. It was never the case. It was never going to work.
Yeah. Are you ready to get to ratings here, Elliot?
I have so many more bad things to say.
Oh, good grief. Okay.
I'll try to be quick, but no promises. Yeah, the thing about Loomis and Zora having a conflict, well, conflict is a little generous, having a disagreement about who should get the MacGuffins after they're done, I straight up forgot that that was supposed to be a thing that they were thinking about when they brought it up at the very end. Mm. And, like, that is such a non-resolution for them to just be like, oh, yeah, hey, by the way, I think we should give it to, we should open source it rather than sell it.
Especially since the guy's dead. So it's not even like they really have that much of an option to do anything other than that at this point.
Well, the thing is, they root the conflict in Zora's base greed, right? And that is not a good idea, in my opinion, because it makes Zora just seem like a jerk. Rather than having it be an actual... The reason I say that it's not a conflict is because it's not. It's not a conflict. Like, if Zora needed the money for, I don't know, an operation for her mother's cancer or something, just pure spitball. If she actually needed the money for anything less than just avarice, then you would have an actual conflict, right? Yeah. But instead, they're just... It's just born out of this character's base goodness and this character's base I'll be good at the endness. So I didn't like that. I thought that was silly. We talked about Kincaid. I mean, just why? Why? Xavier. I hated Xavier so much. He
just
is
like the dad.
He is the Marvel character of this movie. Like, he is he's got that same kind of joking sense of humor. That's just a sense of humor. Like, the sarcastic, doesn't take anything seriously sense of humor. And I thought that they were actually setting him up for an arc, right? Where he's taking more responsibility. And the dad even says, like, I appreciate you doing this for my daughter. And Xavier makes a joke. And I was like, God, Ned, that I will only forgive you for that if we actually come back to this. They don't come back to that. They just drop it. It gets dropped. It never comes up again. Xavier barely plays a part in the movie after that. Does he do anything? Aside from be there? I'm genuinely trying to remember. I don't think he does anything. So just cut him. Just get him out of there. Because he's doing to this movie what the Sun character is doing to War of the Worlds. And if you've seen that movie, you know, that is a brutal thing that I've just said.
Wow, yeah.
Nathan hasn't seen War of the Worlds.
No, I haven't.
I think what really crystallizes this movie's problem, and the problem with the whole franchise in general, to me, is the scene with the Titanosauruses when they're, right, I honestly thought they were going to start, right, mating right there. And I was going to be like, okay, that's stupid, but that's actually kind of funny.
That would have been crazy.
Well, it doesn't happen, so. Again, they didn't have the guts.
I'm happy they didn't have the guts.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have been like, all right, that's a bold decision. But it doesn't matter, because they didn't do it. At the scene with the Titanosauruses, they basically replay the scene where Grant and Sattler first see all the dinosaurs. Like, they play the exact same music. It's the exact same setup where these characters are seeing dinosaurs for the first time, or actually, like, the second time. But, like, enjoying dinosaurs for the first time. Mm. And it really crystallized for me how Jurassic Park, out of all the nostalgia bait, endless sequel franchises of Hollywood, has failed to innovate past the most basic components of its original construction. That this is new for the characters, this is not new for me. So seeing these guys just grinning at some nice looking long-necked herbivore dinosaurs is I would say it's the exact same problem that Deadpool and Wolverine had, where Deadpool killing people and saying the F word is new for Disney. That's not new for me. So just doing it, just running through the motions of this, just playing it straight like that is not enough. And in so many parts of this franchise, the franchise has actually regressed, right? Like, if you go back to the original, it's this really interesting movie about scientific arrogance, and it's kind of a Frankenstein story about men playing God and doing things that they don't fully understand. And then by Fallen Kingdom, the series has kind of devolved into just kind of a vague, very woolly kind of conservationist, environmentalist thing. I wouldn't even call it a theme. It's just kind of like a thing that they do where you're supposed to think that the dinosaurs are just nice to have. They're just nice to have around, and so they shouldn't die. And to be fair, the movie does move away from that. We don't have the stupid, like, I can't remember what her name was.
Yeah, the girl.
Yeah, from Rebirth.
They're alive.
Or her. Claire, the clone girl.
Oh, Claire.
Oh, my gosh. That was so bad.
It's a great
moment. But yeah, I mean, that is such a... You should not have made me think of that moment. That is one of the worst moments I've ever seen. Like, wow. She just killed, like, dozens of people. And I'm supposed to be happy because they're dinosaurs? God, what? What? I'm not happy.
Ellie's not happy.
I think she should go to jail for that.
Do you have a point here?
What am I talking about?
Yeah. Are you going to arrive at a point?
I'm going to have to rewind a little bit because I'm saying that, like, right, the franchise has regressed.
Yeah.
I'm basically saying that this movie is nowhere near as interesting as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, some of that is, yeah, they jettisoned that part of the Jurassic World trilogy, which I appreciate. But they haven't replaced it with anything other than what we've already seen done in the original. And if you're going to try to outdo Prime Spielberg, I don't know, man. You're just going to have to bring the heat in a way that this movie doesn't. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just think this movie fails so consistently at the things that we really need this franchise, or you know what, that I need, mm-hmm. right? Because let's do what you're not supposed to do as a film bro critic type person, and let's acknowledge that other people exist and have their own ideas about what they do and don't enjoy. These movies are incredibly popular.
Yeah.
And not just in the sense that they make tons of money, which they do, but in the sense that audiences consistently rate them higher than critics.
Mm.
So clearly, we are in the minority here when it comes to the masses.
Mm.
And obviously, it's enough for people, right? The Jurassic World franchise is enough for people. I don't know why that is. It's not, frankly, for me to say why that is or should be. But for me, personally, I need more, so much more, than just the scene from Jurassic Park again, but now this guy's named Dr. Loomis for some reason. Because the scene from Jurassic Park has so much more power to it because, first of all, it's new, right? This is something we haven't seen before. And also, right, Alan Grant and Ellie Sattler and Ian Malcolm, they're just so much better characters. You said it, I think, perfectly, in that they don't complicate what they don't need to. I mean, they're pretty simple characters. They're defined by pretty broad strokes characteristics. So obviously it can work. It's just that it doesn't work in this movie because the broad strokes characteristics are A, lame, and B, don't actually factor into the plot that much, right?
Yeah.
Like Grant's characteristic of being a bit stoic and not really liking kids. That comes back into the plot. Same thing with Malcolm. Like, he's constantly using his worldview. And same thing with Sattler. They're constantly using their worldview, their opinion on this project to interface with the plot points. Whereas these guys, they don't really have characteristics. They have a bunch of facts, right? They're like our characters from D&D. We just had a list of facts about them. So they have a character sheet. They don't have an actual character. There's just things that we know about them, and they have nothing really to do with the movie itself, apart from Dr. Loomis. Flip a name. Dr. Loomis wants to help people. Zora kind of wants to help people. It just takes her a while to get her head around to it. And Kincaid is also there. And the antagonist is an antagonist. It's funny. I know I'm going on for so long, and I do apologize, but I'm going to keep on going. The things that I actually thought was going to result in something happening was the oldest daughter of the family falls off the boat, and she thinks that the antagonist tried to kill her. And I was like, I get that the movie is saying that's what happened, but to my eyes, it kind of looked like there wasn't a whole lot he could do. But anyway, it's just another one of those things that doesn't go anywhere. That he finds a gun. It's just, he just looks up and there's a gun being held by a corpse above him. That's what you call your deus ex machinas. And so he has the gun for the rest of the thing. And so all throughout the movie, you're supposed to have in the back of your mind, ooh, here we go. It's gonna be a fight. It's gonna go wrong. And it goes kind of wrong. Actually, I don't know. He defends himself, but it doesn't, nobody has to make any like hard decisions. He doesn't abandon them. I mean, he sort of abandons them, but his abandoning them doesn't really factor into the plot. Like, if he had locked them in the shop, the product placement shop with the mutant raptors, it wouldn't have been genius, but it would have been something, right, that's been set up and comes to fruition. But no, he has the gun, and then immediately dinosaurs show up, the mutant raptors show up that Nathan hates so much. And then they're kind of working together, and then he leaves. He gets in the car and he leaves. And I did actually think the joke, excuse me, of there's a pedestrian in the road, I chuckled at that.
Wow.
But yeah, that's, it's not good. It's not good. Do you want to talk about the D-Rex? Is there anything even to say?
I think I've already said everything. It looks stupid. It's an inconsequential sort of villain. I compared it to those guys from Jurassic Park 2, the book.
Yeah.
I have nothing more to say.
I guess I was talking more about like its design, but yeah, I think you're right.
No,
it's
not, it looks not
great. It looks like the Rancor.
Yeah, it looks kind of like a Rancor.
It's not like, I mean, even Jurassic Park 3, they introduced the Spinosaurus, and then it's there, right, throughout the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. It's like the primary antagonist. The D-Rex just shows up once at the beginning and once at the end, and he kills someone who we don't even care about, so there's not much to put into our minds that this is a dangerous thing, and the design is stupid. If you're going to make a mutant dinosaur, please just
give it two heads.
Yeah, go all the way, man. Just stop making weird T-Rexes or weird Velociraptors like the Indominus Rex and the Indoraptor. They're just weird T-Rex and weird Velociraptor. Make something truly ridiculous. Make it the Rancor. Dude, if they actually had, like, the Rancor as the dinosaur, and they're like, oh, we designed this to be, like, a famous science fiction monster. That would be great.
You'd love that.
I would find that really funny.
Yeah. I've been trying to get to ratings here for, I think, about 15 minutes.
I'm sorry. It's just, you know, I said, you know. I think actually that's the second time I said, you know.
Oh, undoubtedly, yeah.
The Jurassic Park, I really like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And I'm sad that it's come to this. I if you like it, I wish I could be there with you, right? I wish I could like things. Do you think I'm happy disliking things? I'm not. I wish I could be there with you, but unfortunately I can't. So, right. Go with, well, I'm not going to bless you. Go with my envy. I wish I could like this movie.
Well, I think the only thing I'm going to say in response to your unhinged rant about the Jurassic Park franchise,
I don't think it's that unhinged,
is this kind of reminds me of when we did our 100th episode and we asked each other questions. And I think you asked me some question about, you know, does the audience know what it should, in a franchise setting, the people play to the audience or play against the audience? If you think of something like The Last Jedi, which received very divisive reviews from critics and fans for seemingly being a little antagonistic towards the fan base. And I don't know if that's necessarily the solution in like a Jurassic Park sort of sense, because Last Jedi did kind of kill Star Wars movies for the last like half decade or whatever. But I do stand by my response to that question, which is that the audience doesn't necessarily know what's best, what the best movie is, until you show them that movie. Like, the audience doesn't know what a good Jurassic Park sequel looks like until you invent that. And the methodology with which they have gone about trying to show the audience a good Jurassic Park sequel is make Jurassic Park, but worse. And that's just, firstly, stupid, and clearly never going to excite people in the way that, I'm trying to think of great, you know, great sequels like Empire Strikes Back or The Godfather Part 2. I mean, not so much The Godfather Part 2. Blade Runner 2049. Yeah, The Dark Knight. Movies that showed audiences something, I don't know if it's necessarily radically new, but something that was not similar to what they had seen before, or was similar in a way that was new and interesting. Like, Blade Runner 2049 builds on the ideas of the first Blade Runner in interesting and new ways, especially given, right, the like 40-some years that have passed between the two movies. I think it was like 30-some years that actually have passed. 40-some now. But this is how you make an exciting franchise. And I think Jurassic World has been kind of lucky that they've never done anything so radically stupid that they would lose people. I don't think they've ever jumped the shark in a general audience sense in the way that, like, the Fast and Furious franchise has kind of jumped a shark and lost audience interest. Clearly, Jurassic Park has not done that. People continue to show up. And I think people will continue to show up if the movies continue to be at this quality. I think we'll just keep having to do episodes where Elliot gets really upset because a movie that he loves keeps getting terrible sequels. I'd feel the same way if I'm trying to think of a movie. I guess
I do. Can you imagine if Star Wars just kept on getting terrible movies?
I was about to say, I'm like, yeah, it's kind of how I feel going to Star Wars movies, that I'm like, I've got to force myself to kind of like this because it's part of something I love. I would much rather just go to something that's genuinely good and exciting. Anyway, saying all that, let's get to some ratings here. We don't have to, if you have something else you want to say.
Well, I was just going to say that I agree. I really don't want to say that people are wrong about the things that, or that people shouldn't like the things that they like. But I think I would, if anything, I would liken it to what I said about Sherlock Jr., that, yeah, all of this is fine, but surely we all agree that it would be even better if they were innovating and, yeah, right, finding new ways to make dinosaurs exciting. If you ask me, I think that a lot of this franchise's success comes down to the fact that it's the only game in town when it comes to dinosaurs. and people like dinosaurs. People love dinosaurs. Kids love dinosaurs. And where else are you going to get dinosaur fiction except for in Jurassic Park, in Jurassic World? I guess you could watch 65.
Yeah, or you could watch, they had a trailer for some, like, Predator World or something. I don't know what it was. It was some crazy low-budget movie with military guys shooting dinosaurs or something. You could go to that.
What? I don't even know what that is.
I didn't either. I was very confused by it.
Sounds like Starship Troopers.
Yeah, it looked sick. Anyway, are you ready to get to ratings now?
I suppose.
All right, well, I'm going to go first here. I don't really want to belabor the point. The movie's barely better than Dominion, if only because it looks good and isn't held together by shoestrings. It's held together by, I don't know, slightly stronger than shoestring string.
Really nice shoestrings.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 4.7. I think I gave Dominion like a 4 out of 10. 4.7 out of 10.
Yeah. I think this movie's not very good. I would really like it. Oh, it would, if you, as a favor to me, it would be nice if you didn't go out and support it. But I understand, right? Like, yeah, people have their own ideas about what they like and don't like. So I'm not going to say don't go to see it. Although I don't think you should. Which is basically me just saying.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
My point is, this movie's not very good. The Jurassic franchise is an utter disappointment to me. I'm going to give it a D+, because, yeah, it's better than Dominion. And then it and Fallen Kingdom and Jurassic Park 3 are fighting it out for second worst. And then Jurassic World and Jurassic Parks 1 and 2 are better.
All right. We don't have to share our Jurassic Park franchise ratings. Anyway, I'm going
to go... Yeah, because it would make me very sad to hear yours.
Yeah, you don't want to know where Jurassic World is on mine.
I already know where Jurassic World is on yours. And it's a disgrace.
Anyway, I'm going to give my recommendation. I went to I went to 3 movies in theaters this weekend. The best of the 3, and if you are trying to go to the theaters and you don't want to watch Jurassic World Rebirth, you want to vote with your dollar and tell Universal to make a better Jurassic World movie, you should go to F1. It is a very good sports movie if you're a big sports movie fan, if you're a fan of watching movies that make you go, dang, they don't make movies like that anymore, for the 10th time in the last decade. This is a great movie for that. Joseph Kosinski, who made every dad's favorite movie of the 2020s with Top Gun Maverick, he's back. He's got another aging movie star to play a Maverick-type character who knows more than everyone around him. I'm sounding a little sarcastic. It's genuinely a lot of fun. It's super well done. It's about a sport that, at least for me, I'm not a big F1 person, but I thought it was super exciting. I thought it was really well done. I didn't even realize they had, like, rules. I thought they just kind of waved a flag and then were like, yeah, whatever happens, happens out there. It makes sense that they can't just, you know, do whatever. But when they were reviewing something and they were like, they're reviewing it to see if they're going to call a penalty. I'm like, call a penalty? What are you talking about? It's cars, bro. It's not Mario Kart. It's very entertaining. Brad Pitt does a great job. Everyone else does a great job. It looks great. If you watch that, probably watch Ford v Ferrari afterwards, because that's like a better car movie. But this is a very good movie. See it in theaters. It's a lot of fun. When I saw it, the whole theater was having a good time. All of the people were laughing at all the jokes of Brad Pitt being witty and stuff. It's a good movie.
I agree. I second this recommendation. I'm going to say something. I'm going to dispense a weapons tier opinion. Are you ready?
Okay.
I liked this more than I liked Top Gun Maverick.
Wow.
Yep.
I'd probably go Top Gun Maverick over this, personally.
But... Well, I think... And it's not like I dislike Top Gun Maverick. I just think that the non-action stuff in this movie, right, is better than the non-action stuff in Top Gun Maverick. Sure. Because we said in our review, or certainly I said in our review, that for me, Top Gun Maverick really is... hard carried by the scenes in the jet. I didn't feel so much that way about F1. I felt like I was invested in what was happening outside of the cars in a way that I wasn't with the stuff happening outside of the Jets, Maverick.
Hmm.
Anyway, my recommendation is going to be the original Jurassic Park. Oh, if no you way. Want to watch a dinosaur movie, just watch Jurassic Park, man. Rewatch it. I rewatched it last night. It's so freaking good. Spielberg, I love you, Spielberg. I wish I could give you a hug.
good grief.
Oh, don't you like Spielberg, Nathan?
Yeah, he's all right.
Good lord.
He's cobbled together a couple of mediocre all right. films in his all right. time.
That's enough. All right, that's enough of that. Spielberg is a genius. He's Holy a master of the craft. He's one of the best filmmakers of all time. And if you disagree, well, I don't know. I think you might be a little bit silly. But yeah, this movie is so much better than Rebirth, and it'll scratch the itch. It will. It'll scratch the dinosaur itch. Yeah, watch Jurassic Park. Just watch the T-Rex breakout scene on YouTube. It's amazing. It's perfect. It's a perfect scene.
That is the best scene in that movie.
But, hey, the Jurassic franchise has taught us that life is hard and full of disappointments.
Sure. If you want my thoughts on Jurassic Park, you can listen to our episode on it. And if you have thoughts on Jurassic Park, or if you have thoughts on the newest movie, you can send us an email. We love getting emails. Send us an email with
Hey, if you have thoughts on Superman, let me know, because I'm still weighing up whether or not to see it.
No, you should see it, Elliot. You have to. It's what we're reviewing next week.
Okay, well, I'm deciding what we're reviewing next week. And also, if you see it, tell me what it is, and I'll take that into consideration.
I'll email you.
That's great. Yeah, perfect. Why are we using the email? No one else is.
Anyway, we're going to be back next week. Yeah, Elliot gets to pick, so we'll be doing some goofiness from the 50s or something like that. But it's going to be really exciting. I'm excited for it. Be sure to tune in. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you have a great week.